Berukim Abayim Rabotai, welcome to another edition of our Thursday night class. This is Parashat Vayechi. We're at the end of the book of Bereshit. Of course, we have coming up Shabbat Hazak, which is a great accomplishment, and we pray that God should give us the strength that just like we were able to be Doresh, the 12 Parashiyot in Sefer Bereshit, we'll be able to go through Shemot and the rest of the Torah and uncover the secrets that are underneath the surface. Gal enai ve'abita nifnaot mitoratecha. God should open our eyes and we should be able to see the wonders that are in the Torah. This week is no exception. We have some very beautiful Devarei Torah and beautiful ideas that we'd like to develop. But again, I need your patience and we just have to go slowly and build some foundations in order to get to the points. So I guess a good place to start would be the beginning. So let's begin the first pasuk. V'chi Yaakov be'eres Mitzrayim sheva esre shana. So our parasha begins with Yaakov Abinu living in Mitzrayim for 17 years. Now, something happens this week, at least in our synagogue, it happens every single year since I've been the rabbi, is that when we invite the fellow to take the Sefer Torah out of the Hechal, they can never find where the parasha is. And usually they have to call the rabbi up and say, you know, we don't know, we can't find where Parashat Vayechi is. Because the Parashat is a Parashat Setumah. I'd like to explain to you what a Parashat Setumah is. Normally, whenever we start a new Parashah, either it starts on a new line, and there's like an indentation, so it's very easy to locate where the new Parashah is. It's a new paragraph. Or the new parashah starts on the same line where the last parashah ended, but there's a gap. There's a space of nine letters. So it's very easy to see that white space, and then you're able to know exactly where the parashah is going to begin. That's normally called a parashah setumah. Setumah means it's locked in on both sides, but even a parashah setumah is easily identifiable because of the gap. Parashat Vayechi is the exception to the rule. It is a Parashat Setumah plus, meaning it's on the same line as the end of Parashat Vayigash without a gap, without any space. So it just flows right in to a another Parashat without any letters that are separated. So it's hard to identify because you think it's part of the same paragraph. So that she right away starts with the question, Lama parashazu setuma? It's the million-dollar question. Why is it? If indeed it's a separate parasha, why not? Why doesn't it follow the regular rules of new parashiyot? Either keep the space or start it on a new line. Ze she'elat rashi. That sounds like a simple question, right? Comes the Siftei Chachamim and asks a very Jewish question on Rashi, and that is, who says that Parashat Vayechi is a new parasha? Your whole question is what? Well, it's a new parasha, therefore why is it Setumah? Hold it, who told you it's a new parasha? Maybe it's all one long parasha. So he comes along and gives a simple answer. The Maharal gives the same answer, and he says, listen, Rabotai, did you ever hear of Ezra HaSofer? Ezra HaSofer already gave us a list of all the parashiyot, so we know there's a parashah called Vayechi. He gave it to us, we have a Kabbalah, so that she doesn't have to prove to us that it's a separate parashah. We know that already. Our regions of Te'achamim, Kilomar, Kabbalah, hu biyadenu me'ezra, alav shalom, she parashat Vayechi, hu techinat piska. It's a new parashah, velo chada parashah. It's not one parashah with Vayigash. V'derech parashah setumah, normally a parashah setumah, shi'ura revach tesha otiyot. Normally it has the space of nine letters. V'haga kula setumah, v'en ba revach klal. Here there's no space at all. So therefore as she asks, lama parashah zu setumah? Since I told you that this is only an introduction and this really doesn't count, this is not on my time, this part of the shiur, this is on your time, I'll tell you when the clock starts, I'd like to introduce a beautiful pirush that I saw from a rabbi called the Bechor Shor. Bechor Shor was a rabbi called Rabbi Alexander Sender Shor. Big Tamid Acham from the previous generation. His comments he's writing on the Gemara Pesachim, page 6. There's a rule in the Talmud. The rule is, En Mukdam U'Me'uhar B'Torah. Very important klal. The Torah is not written necessarily in chronological order. That means sometimes the Torah will write something earlier in the Torah, but it really happened later on, and something later on that actually happened earlier. So you can't read the Torah as a straight timeline, because you have to know it is subject to the rule of En Mukdam U'Me'uhar B'Torah. A Sidur, for example, that rule wouldn't work. You know, in a Sidur, you want everything to go in order. You don't have to go back and forth. But for some reason, in the Chumash, that's the klal that works. I once heard an unbelievable explanation why it's so. A big rabbi said it. He said, because there's a big controversy when we give out the aliyot on Shabbat. You know, the three first aliyot are the coveted aliyot. Who gets Kohen, who gets Levi, and then Yisrael is the Shlishi, is the first of the aliyot that we give to the Yisraelim. Now, if you give a guy the V'i, he might get offended. I should be the third guy. Why'd you put me in the fourth? But once we have the rule of En Mukdam U'Me'uhar B'Torah, the fourth aliyah can say, maybe my parasha was actually written before the Shlishi, and therefore I'm better than the Shlishi. So therefore, who knows? Therefore, you know, it's to mitigate the aliyah politics. Okay. So he has a klal based on the Gemara in Pesachim. The klal says like this, that when do you say En Mukdam U'Me'uhar B'Torah? That's only in two different parashiyot. But in the same parasha, everything is going to be in sync. Everything is going to be in the same timeline. You don't use the rule of En Mukdam U'Me'uhar B'Torah in one parasha. That's the Gemara Pesachim. So says the Bechor Shor, based on this, I now can answer, how do I know that Parashat Vayichi is a separate parasha? Why? Because if you look at the end of Parashat Vayigash, what does it say at the end of Vayigash? Vayeshev Yisrael be'eres Mitzrayim be'eres Goshen. The Jews lived in Goshen. Vayachazu ba'an, they had a holding there. Vayifru vayirbu me'od. And they flourished. Now hold it. When did they flourish? When did Bnei Yisrael start to vayifru vayirbu me'od? That doesn't happen until Parashat Shemot. Bnei Yisrael paru vayishnitzu vayirbu. When did that happen? After Yaakov Abinu dies and after all the Shevatim die. So this is a classic case of En Mukdam U'Me'uhar B'Torah, because you have Vayifru Vayirbu, which is later on, and then the next parasha is what? Vayichi Yaakov. Yaakov is alive. It's out of order. So says the Bechor Shor, that's a proof that it must be a separate parasha. Because if it was in the same parasha, you're not allowed to use the rule of En Mukdam U'Me'uhar B'Torah. But now that we see that the Torah, back to back, gives us two different stories that are in different timelines, must be that they're in different parashiyot. So therefore, that she has every right to ask, if indeed it's a different parasha, why then is it Situmah? But the nine letters. So now all we did is just justify the she'ela of Rashi. What is the answer? Yeah, I know you know the answer. He says, Lefi shekeman sheniftar Yaakov Abinu, once Yaakov Abinu passed away, nistemu enehem v'libam shel Yisrael. The eyes of Bnei Yisrael went dark. Nistemu means they became concealed. Just like when you have a parasha Situma, it's closed. It's a closed parasha. So too the eyes of Bnei Yisrael became closed, so to speak. They were put in darkness, because that's when the trouble all began, when Yaakov Aminu passed away. I asked the question on Dashi, is it true? Did all the trouble begin when Yaakov passed away? What trouble? The trouble doesn't begin till next week. As far as I know, after Yaakov passed away, we still were living, you know, under normal good circumstances. So what does Dashi mean when he says, oh, you know why it's Setumah? Because once Yaakov passes away, it's downhill from there. Nistimu enehem. The eyes of Bnei Israel were sealed. So I saw, brought down, from a great rabbi called Michtam de David Pardo. And he says, yeah, I'll show you. What happened after Yaakov passed away? So now they have a mourning period in Israel. They have a 70-day mourning period, I'm sorry, in Mitzrayim. And there's a lot of crying, and Yosef is tending to his father, etc. Now Yosef has to make good on the shivu'ah that he made to his father, that he's going to interm his body and bring it to Hebron. That's the swear that he made to his father. So he has to get now clearance from Paro just to tell him that he's going to be leaving the country for a few days to bury his father. Look what the Pasuk says in the Perek Nun, Pasuk Dalet. Vayavru yemei bechito, the crying finished in Egypt. Vaydaber Yosef el bet Paro lemor. And Yosef speaks to Bet Paro. What does Bet Paro mean? To the house of Paro. We would call that the staff of Paro. Imnam matzati chen be'enechem daberuna be'ozne Paro lemor. Could you go speak to Paro on my behalf? Hold it. Yosef needs to speak to a staff member in order to get clearance that he should give a message to Paro. Until this point, Yosef has open access to the king. Laissez-faire, open door policy. All of a sudden now, Yosef says, Mechtam to David, can I just walk into the king? Before he was able to walk in, he doesn't even have to knock. Yosef was the most powerful one in Egypt. Now all of a sudden, he lost his clout. Now all of a sudden, he cannot just come in. Now he needs somebody on the inside. Imagine Yosef's got to ask a staff member, do me a favor, speak to the boss. Ask him to try to convince him I need to get out of the country for a couple of days. What? You still need to rely on somebody? What happened to the most powerful man? Says Rabbi Pardo that that's what happened after Yaakov Abinu died. The shift changed in Egypt. All of a sudden, Yosef started to lose his clout. And what happens when the Jewish leader starts to lose his clout? That means the Jews started to lose their clout. And now there was a shift change. And now Nistimu in him. Now they started to feel the uncomfortability, which is always so. You know, the Jewish people come to a country, in the beginning, it's a honeymoon. The country welcomes them and everything's nice, they make business. And it's just a matter of time that the country eventually will turn on them. And the Jewish people have learned that throughout history, whether it was in Spain, whether it was in Europe, and guess what? Whether it's in America. Although we've had a very nice run in this country and we've been enjoying it, and Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of freedoms. However, there will come a time, and who knows if that time hasn't come already, where all of a sudden they're not going to look at us like they looked at us till now. Now all of a sudden the senators are not going to call you back so fast like they used to. And now they're not going to speak always pro-Israel in public anymore. Now they're going to start to show their anti-Semitic colors like we're starting to see today. That's exactly what happened after Yaakov Avinu died. Now, Paro says, don't let Yosef in. I don't want to see this Jew. Now he has to petition Bet Paro in order to get a favor done. So indeed, yes, something changed after Yaakov Avinu passed away. It seems that it was the Zechut of Yaakov that was keeping everything under control. Once the Tzaddik passed away, everything started to unravel. You see the detriment of losing Tzaddikim. However, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, alav shalom, quotes a Soforno. Soforno has a different reason why Yosef did not go into Paro, why he needed to use the staff members. I'll quote the Soforno, I have it in front of me over here. He says, Vaydaber Yosef el bet Paro, ki en lavo el sha'ar melech bilbusak. Interesting. He says, because Yosef is in mourning for his father. And Yosef, therefore, must be wearing sackcloth. And therefore, we know from Megillat Esther, ki en lavo, you can't go to the Sha'ar HaMelech, to the king's inner chamber, when you're wearing sackcloth. So therefore, Sforno learns, wasn't because he lost his clout that he lost his influence. Because he was Aven. And therefore, his scruffy beard, and he's wearing sackcloth. He's not obviously dressed properly. So therefore, Sforno has a different mahalach. That's not the reason why he couldn't go directly in. It's because of his Sak. Ask Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky on the Seforno. The class didn't start yet. This is just a warming up. I'll tell you exactly when you have to start paying attention. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that what? Ah, no. He says, what are you talking about? What's the reason Yosef at that point was called an onen? His father died and they didn't bury him yet. Now, what is the main purpose that an onen must do? Why is he exempt from all the mitzvot? Why is onen free from all the mitzvot? Because he has one function, the onen. Bury his father. Therefore, we don't want him to be preoccupied with anything. He must do everything and everything in his possibility. We don't want him to be delayed by praying shacharit, by putting tefillin on, by making netilat yadayim with berachot. Don't even make berachot. You have to eat, put it in your mouth, and get back to the mitzvah burying your father. So says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Yosef is onen. Onen can do anything that has to do with burying the father. And if it means that he has to go to Paro, in order to petition Paro to allow him to take his father out, he could shave and take off his sackcloth. That's Sorech Amet. And therefore, he asked on his father, what do you mean? He said, take off your sackcloth, shave. Guess what? When Yosef came out of prison the first time, what day was it? Rosh Hashanah. And what does the Pasuk say? Vaygalah. He shaved. He shaved on Rosh Hashanah. Kavod HaMelech. It's Yom Tov. Yom Tov is very important, but Kavod HaMelech, you got to shave. When Rav Moshe Shera, Alav HaShalom, had a meeting with President Kennedy, the meeting was on Tisha B'Av. The week of Tisha B'Av, Rav Moshe Shera, Alav HaShalom, is clean shaven usually. But that week, scruff, because you don't shave. But he's going to see the President of the United States. So he asked the question to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein said, you can shave on Tisha B'Av. He's going to see a melech, he's going to see a king, and they're respectful to go meet the king with a scruffy face. So therefore says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, I don't know what this Sforno wants. Ki en lavo es shar a melech bilbu sak? Take off your sack. So therefore must be that you know what the reason why he didn't go in? Not because he had sackcloth and he was scruff. He couldn't go in because they didn't let him in. Like we learned. Because, like Mechtam David Pardo said, they didn't let him in because they started to show their true colors. And therefore, Yosef now needed to speak to some of his friends on the inside that they should convince Paro to let Yaakov Avinu go out. So yes, indeed, Nistemu Enehem, something definitely changed in the attitude towards the Egyptians, towards Yosef, and therefore subsequently towards the Jewish people when Yaakov passed away. Hence, it is a parasha that is Setumah. Great. However, I want to present to you tonight a novel interpretation to this Pirush Rashi. The interpretation comes from a sefer called Meir Enei Chachamim. The Meir Enei Chachamim was a Gaon Me'astrovcha, one of the great tzaddikim. There's three volumes they have of his Torah. He has on Shas, and he has on the Hagim, and he has and Pirashat Hashu, I recommend it. Each one of these rabbis that are short are marvelous ideas. What makes this special is he learns this Rashi like nobody else. Everybody learns that the Parashat Setumah is coming to tell us bad news. Nistemu enehem, they went dark. They got, they're in trouble. The Galut is beginning. Everybody learns the Parashat Setumah is heralding something negative. Comes the Meir Enei Chachamim and says, wrong. Parashat Setumah actually is a great thing. He looks at it in a positive way, and he looks at it as a, optimistically. How? How can you say, Nistemu Enehem, Parashat Setumah? So he says the following. Vayhi Yaakov, I'm going to read it. Pirush Rashi Zal, Lama parasha zu setuma? Nistimu enehem v'nibam shel Yisrael metzarat ha-shamud. V'abiur, explanations. Ki lo haya be'efshari li Yisrael lisbol et ol ha-galuyot v'ha-shi'bud b'gashmiyut v'ruhaniyut. He says a rule. B'nei Yisrael doesn't do so good in exile. We don't fare so well in the diaspora because the diaspora takes its toll on our physical bodies and more importantly, on our souls. There is definitely collateral damage when the Jew finds himself in Galut. If you need a proof, just look at the history of the Jews in America the last 250 years, and you'll see what type of collateral damage it has had, at least on the soul of the Jew. You can go to Europe and see what type of collateral damage it had on the physical bodies as well. You can go even back before that to Eastern Europe. You go back before that to Spain, and you can see that the Rav is right. Galut definitely has its attack, its negativity on the Jewish people. V'rak zot nechematenu begalut. But what's our consolation in Galut? She'anu zochrim shehayinu al admatenu. It's a big hadush. He reveals that there's a certain item that can protect the Jew in exile from the, let's say, the negative forces and the culture that is anti-Torah. What is that? No, he doesn't say that. That's a good guess, but the Rav says that by remembering the old country, by remembering what your grandfather did, by remembering what your great-grandfather did, what happens in a new country, you're in Galut. So you left already the old home. So he says, as long as you're still connected and you have some sort of kesher to the previous generations, to the customs that they used to have, to the traditions that, because when you come to a new country, they have different culture, they have different traditions. So when you remember how your grandfather used to keep Shabbat, and how your grandmother used to prepare for the Seder, and how you remember how he used to bake matzah on Erev Pesach, and how you remember all those traditions from the old country, all those things that they don't have in the new country, but you still have memories of it, that connects you. And that keeps you floating until the Galut is over. It's not only nostalgia. Those memories that we have of our previous generations, that keeps the person connected to something authentic, to something that is antique, to something that is very, very valuable. Of course, the modern generation, they're exposed to a lot of things. So when you still remember yesteryear, what the old timers used to do, that is a great element of protection to carry a person to the end, until Galut ends. So he writes, V'lezot anu mikavim, she'ashem yidbarach yazir et atarotero liyoshna. We hope that when the Galut is over, we will go back to the old traditions. V'hine, v'parashat v'yigash, nichtav miYaakov u'banav shayu be'eretz hakodesh. He says, look where Parashat Vayechi is located. Look where it's situated. It's in between two Parashiyot. It's in between Vayigash to the right and Shemot to the left. Vayigash is all about Yaakov living in Eretz Yisrael. He's still in Israel, Yaakov. And Bet Yaakov is in all its glory. They're there. They're in Canaan. The brothers are all there. The house of Yaakov is intact. That's Eretz Yisrael. That's the old home. That's the authentic picture of the house and family of Yaakov. What is Shemot? In Shemot, that's when the Galut starts. The Rav says, when Galut starts, that's a good sign also. You know why? Because once you start the clock for Galut, you know, that's it, the Geulah is on the way. Start the timer. We know that Galut has to last for a certain time. Once already you start to go, everybody looks at each other, okay, we're in. The night has begun, but we know once the night begins, every night comes to an end, and ultimately there'll be a Ge'ulah, so therefore there's hope. So Parashat Vayigash, there's hope because we're still in Israel. Parashat Shemot, there's hope because why? The Galut begins, and the Lashon of the Rav is, Vashi'bud hu athalta de Ge'ulah. The Shi'bud always is the beginning of the Ge'ulah, by Erev Boker. So he says, what's the most dangerous parasha? When you're not in Eretz Yisrael and you didn't start Galut. on the tennis court, we call that no man's land. And no man's land in the Torah is Parashat Vayechi. They're not in Eretz Yisrael, so they don't have that authentic old Judaism that they were enjoying in the house of Yaakov. And the clock of Galut didn't start yet, so they cannot really anticipate Geulah yet. So those years that Parashat Vayechi finds itself is very dangerous for the Jew in Galut. This is the most dangerous part, where he's not connected to anything. He doesn't have a connection to Eretz Yisrael, nor does he have a connection yet to Geulah, because the Galut didn't start yet. Therefore, Vayechi, according to the Me'ir and Achamim, is the most dangerous situation. So what does God do? God did something amazing. He went and did us a great chesed. And he makes what's called Parasha Setuma. What is the Parasha Setuma value? It takes Parashat Vayechi and links it to Parashat Vayigash. Now, in the DNA of Klal Yisrael, even though they're going to be in Mitzrayim, there will be an automatic link to the old home. The Parashat Setuma is not just topography. It's the way they write it. This is the way they typeset the page. No, a Parashat Setuma does something. Parashat Setuma affects something in Klal Yisrael. Without the Parashat Setuma, there would have been a disconnect from the Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, from the old home, from the tradition of Yaakov, from their grandfather's house, and it would have been total assimilation. It would have been a bankruptcy. It would have been a wipeout. Comes the Parashat Setuma as a Chesed Elyon, and makes sure that Parashat Vayigash and Vayechi are connected. Rav's Lashon. Vim has v'shalom, hayta parashazu petuha. Look at this. Has v'shalom. We don't know. Anybody care? If I told you the parasha is petuha, not going to lose any sleep. So okay, petuha, setuma. By the way, both. Okay. We didn't know what petuha before this class was anyway. And the Rab is saying, has v'shalom, if the parasha was petuha, oh, this is a big tragedy. Hainu shahaitam nifseket miparashat vayigash. Would be separated, detached from vayigash. As has v'shalom merov hayeush, we would have been desperate. Lo haita tekuma nebnei Yisrael. We would not have recovered from galut. Lachen Hashem yitbarach berov rachamav. Asa le parashazu setuma. By the way, if I were to ask you, make me a list of 100,000 examples of God's mercy, I promise you, you are not going to write, oh, parashas setuma of Vayechi. That's one of the... Who thought that that's a manifestation of God's mercy? Parashas setuma, it's like I said, it's a typeset. Comes the Rav and says, no, this already created a reality that the Bnei Yisrael will be in Mitzrayim, but they'll still have the nostalgic memories of the old home. And that's very important, because in Egypt they have a bad culture like America. In America they don't have our culture of what Shabbat is and what Yom Tov is and what Kashrut is and what dress code is and what Jewish music is and what Jewish speech is. The degenerate society. So if you don't have a remember what your grandfather used to do, what your grandmother used to do. So when we remember, yes, our grandmother used to cook on Friday afternoon for Shabbat. That's very important to remember that. That'll carry you through Galut. When you remember your grandfather used to get up early and go to shul and give tzedakah. No? The old timers give the new timers an insurance policy. But chas v'shalom, if you stop thinking about them, and the new generation has no recollection of what they did in the old home, and they're trying to forget it, and you're not trying to preserve it to a certain degree, then he says that's a parasha petuha. When Vayigash is separated from Vayechi, it's game over. So he says, V'lachem Hashem Yitbarach berov rahamav asa leparashazu setuma. Hainu sheparashazu mekushar leparashat vayigash Kishahayu od be'eretz hakodesh. I don't expect our members to fall out of their chairs, but you know, if you did, I wouldn't be surprised. This is amazing. Hadush. So there were the Meir Nechamim is saying again that since God knew that there's going to be Nistimu in him, that the Galut's going to start in earnest. Now the Galut is going to start, and Klais is going to be in trouble, not for 5 years like in Germany. It's going to be for 210 years, generational, four or five generations. Borei Olam says, there's no way they're going to make it. Unless I put into the genome of those people where they came from, as long as they remember that they have a history, they're not Egyptians, they're Jews, and they have their own value system, and this is just a temporary station stop. Galut to the Jew is not a destination, it's a station. It's temporary. Ultimately, when you finish with it, you go back to the old tradition. But in the meantime, you have to make sure that they don't strip everything from you. So therefore, it's so important to remember Benhag Avotenu, Shema Beni Musar Avicha, Valti Tosh Torat Imech. That's very, very important. And therefore, Vayigash must be connected to Vayichi. The connection to Vayigash and Vayichi is critical. It's critical for Klal Yisrael's endurance. Now, once we have this Hiddush, so therefore, again, when they take out the Sefer Torah on Shabbat, and you're going to see the Parasha Setumah, 99% of the shul is going to be crying. Oh, Parasha Setumah, the guys that came to this class are going to be laughing. And it's going to be like the Gemara at the end of Makot. They're going to look at you and they say, what are you crying for? You didn't come to the class. What do you mean? Parashas Tumah, it's terrible. You say it's terrible. Meir Nechem says it's the greatest thing that ever happened. They redeem my Torah for some harvest and some vikar. Parashas Tumah. Now, I introduce what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said. This is the way I got to the next part. Lubavitcher Rebbe said, he was an expert, maybe one of the greatest experts in analysis of Pirush Rashi. That must be said. Amongst all the other great wisdoms that the Rav had, the Rebbe had, but he was a master in dissecting Rashi like nobody's business, ripping every word up. Even he had pages explaining the Dibur HaMatchil. You know, why did Rashi put this as the Dibur HaMatchil as a book? So he has a klal. He writes the klal in this week's parasha. That's what I saw. Maybe he writes in other places as well. And he says, pay attention to always the first few rashis in the parasha, because he's setting you up for the theme of the entire parasha. The midrashim that he chooses to bring and the ideas that he chooses to profess in the beginning of the parasha, he's trying to say, this is the essence. And therefore, try to follow that line throughout the parasha. That's a new chedush. It's almost like you have a foreword of a book. And the foreword of the book tells you, you know, my purpose of the book is to accomplish A, B, C, D. Rashi in every parasha will always try to tell you in the beginning of the parasha, this is the key item. Focus on this item and try to find this theme throughout the parasha. So when I saw that Pirush of the Rebbe, I said, well, where else do you see this theme over here of remembering the old home and so on? So I found it. Shatat Ishmael. Let's go a little further now. I know some of our members are going to say, what do you think? We just came to learn one pasuk, one nashi. No, we're going to go further now. Yaakov Abinu is on his deathbed. So what does he do? He calls for his son Yosef. The pasuk says, and I quote, yes. Vayaged li Yaakov amin perek memchet pasuk pet. They tell Yaakov, vayomer hine bincha Yosef. I'm sorry, the pasuk before that. Vayi achar divir me'edeh, vayomer li Yosef. They tell Yosef, hine abicha chole. Your father's sick. So what does he do when he hears that his father's sick? We have a sigula. If you have a grandfather or a father that's sick, What's the best refuah you can bring to a father who's sick? Bring him his grandchildren. Once you bring him his grandchildren, finish. So the pasuk is Vayikar Shnei Banav Imot Ben Hashevet Ephraim. Once the father sees his grandchildren, that's it. That's the best refuah shleima. And it says it's happened. Vayaged the Yaakov Vayomer Hinei Benecha Yosef Ba'alecha Vayitchazek Yisrael. It wasn't even Chazek. He got strong. Good. And at this meeting over here, what happens? We all know the stories. I mean, Asher and Ephraim are the grandchildren. And they're going to come to get a beracha from their grandfather. And Yosef, of course, positions them correctly. So all Yaakov has to do is stick his hand out. His right hand will hit Menashe, the older one. His left hand will hit Ephraim, the younger one. That's the way we give berachot. And of course, we all know what happens. Sikelet Yadav, he did the famous crisscross. Putting his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Menashe. Yosef right away protested and said, no, what are you doing? Which is strange to me, by the way. I don't know what happened to Kibud Avaim over here, but basically he's telling his father, you're wrong. What are you doing? And then, of course, Yaakov will tell his son, be careful who you say is wrong. Yadati bini yadati. I know what you know, and I know what you don't know. So leave it all alone. That's the story. I just had a question. It wasn't my question. One of the old members of our synagogue asked me this question this week. He said, Rav, I understand that Yosef has a problem with the blessing, that why should the berachot be, you know, why should he switch his hands? But wait. Even before that, if you look at Yaakov Abinu says like this. He tells his son, your two sons that were born in Egypt, lihem, they belong to me. Ephraim u'mnashe, Ephraim and Menashe, kiruven v'shimon yehiyuli. They're going to be like Ruven and Shimon. In the airline industry, we say they got an upgrade. Before this, they were not Shevatim. Ephraim and Menashe are grandchildren. But all of a sudden, they got upgraded to be what? Shevatim, Kiruven v'Shimon. Hold it. Yaakov Abinu over here already says, Ephraim and Menashe. Why didn't Yosef come along and say, hey, oh, Dad, Menashe and Ephraim. You got it backwards. Over here, Yosef's got no problem. So it's, the Ramban says, the fact that he puts Ephraim in conversation before Menashe doesn't bother Yosef. Yosef understands good and well why he puts Ephraim first. He was very close to Ephraim. He learned Torah with him every day. But once you're giving the blessings, you're talking turkey. Nah, this is major league stuff. Talking Ephraim and Menashe, big deal. And it's even more than Ramban says. Yosef thought that his father didn't know what he was doing. He thought that his father was mixed up. He thought that when he mixed his hands, that he was giving the beracha to the wrong child. He didn't have the right kavanah. And Yosef felt that a beracha that's given with the wrong kavanah is not going to come true. Which is, if he thinks, by switching his hands, if he thinks that he's putting his hand on Menashe and Ephraim and he has the wrong, so that what Yosef is saying, these berachot are not going to come true. That's why he's correcting his father. And then Yaakov was, I know I have the right cover. I know exactly who's who. And I know exactly where my hand is. And I know that my right hand is not on Menashe. I know it's on Ephraim. I did that on purpose. My kavanah is very good. So a berachah without kavanah, that was Yosef's concern. I just saw this morning from Rav Steinem in Lava Shalom. He says, if according to the Ramban, if a beracha without kavanah doesn't come true, so how did the beracha then of Yaakov come true? Because you attacked what he was Esav. It's interesting what he writes, Rav Steinem. He says, you're right, if he would have had kavanah, it would have been even a bigger beracha. But I don't know why he has to say that. You can say simply, at the end when it was revealed, he gave him a second beracha. So the second beracha, it was midah. But nonetheless, so that's that. But the real question we have on the story of Menashe and Ephraim is the following. Rabotai. There's no problem to make mistakes in life. People make mistakes in life. Even in tzaddikim make mistakes in life. Okay, it's human. To err is human. We know that. But to make the same mistake twice, that already is a problem. You're supposed to learn from your mistakes. A mistake can be valuable if you learn the lesson. But if you don't learn the lesson from a mistake and you repeat it again, shame on you. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, Yaakov, you saw what showing favoritism does to a family. You went through this already. You gave your Sefer Ketonet Pasim a few extra pieces of fabric, and it caused Vayisne'u Oto, Vaykan'u Bo. It turned the family upside down. It threw you into depression for 22 years. Shechina left. Acrimony in the highest level. And the Gemara says, from here you learn, Olam al yishane adam ben min abanim. You can't show favoritism with your children. Look what it does. It was a mistake, and that's a great lesson to be learned. And what does Yaakov come and do in this parasha? The same exact item. Menashe and Ephraim were not the only grandchildren of Yaakov. Every one of his kids has children. And he comes along and he says, I'm not giving all my grandchildren berachot. Only two that I'm going to give is Menashe and Ephraim. You're upgraded like Reuven and Shimon. Yaakov Kamenetsky says he fell into the same trap again. Here we go again. Now you expect to see all the other brothers. What do you mean? My son is not good. Now the cousins are going to start fighting with each other. You got a berachah. Get out of here. We'll send you back to the... And the family will be turned upside down again. What is Yaakov doing by giving Menashe and Ephraim a berachah? Now, if he wants to say, you are receiving the berachah on behalf of everybody, okay, everybody's getting a berachah. But that's not the case. It's only to Menashe. And they become, by the way, the coined berachah that every father will give his child. When we bless our children on Friday night, we don't say, Yisi Mechayim Kiri Uvem V'Shimonu Yisachar Zevudun. We say, Kefrayim Mechim Nashe. And what about all the other brothers? Sorry, you didn't make it to the Sidur on Friday night. Chaura, there should be jealousy. This is the question. You know what he answers? I'm paraphrasing. This is what he answers. He says there's two types of berachot. Now these are my words. There's one beracha that I would call a beracha of luxury. It's a luxury beracha. And then there's another beracha that's a beracha of necessity. I'll explain to you what I mean. If let's say the Baba Sali comes into the room, Baba Sali is a great rabbi, and now the Baba Sali is giving out berachot, and he comes, he says, what can I do for you? No, Rabbi, just give me beracha. Beautiful, I get a beracha from the Baba Sali. That's a luxury beracha. I didn't ask for anything. I mean, don't need anything. There's nothing wrong. I get a beracha, beautiful. Now, there's another type of guy that comes along and says, please, dear Rabbi, but Menan, I'm very sick. And the doctors are giving me very bad reports. Please, Rabbi, I need a beracha. And the rabbi says, okay, what's your name? Make a tikkun, you're a beracha, refuah shelema, refuah tanefesh, that's a beracha of necessity. He needs the beracha. What's the difference between the two? Nobody gets jealous of a beracha that's given from necessity. When this guy comes along and finds that he got a beracha from Baba Sali because he's dying from cancer, nobody says, oh, you're so lucky, how come I didn't get a beracha like that? They say, good luck to you. I'm happy I don't need that beracha, by the way. So, keep that beracha. You know, so. When it's a beracha, general, you know, general goodness, general maintenance, yeah, we all want that one. Why did you get one? I didn't get one. But if it's because, God forbid, a person has a handicap and the beracha is in order to give him a boost to his deficiency, I don't want a deficiency, I don't want a beracha. Nobody's jealous of that. Nobody's jealous of somebody's eyeglass prescription. You know, it's, oh, I'm jealous of you. Oh, you have glasses, no, I don't. You keep your glasses. I don't want to wear glasses. One rabbi said, nobody's jealous of their friend's medicine cabinet. You know, you open your friend's medicine case, he has all these medicines. He says, oh, wow, look at all these medicines. I don't have nothing like this. Well, I'm so lucky. He said, good luck. You keep the medicine to yourself. I want my medicine cabinet to be empty. So, but you, so then with the same thing here. He says, amazing. He says, you know why Ephraim and Menashe got the blessing? Not because they were getting a free blessing from Yaakov. This wasn't a luxurious blessing. They weren't getting the blessing because they deserved it, and Yaakov, I mean, was favoring them. You know why they got the blessing? Because they needed it. There was something wrong with Menashe and Ephraim. And therefore, they needed the beracha in order to give them a certain boost, a certain koach. And what was wrong with them? Says Rabbi Yaakov and Abedi, listen to a golden piece. He says, Vandir Eli, the Bnei Yosef, hutzrechu leberacha miyuchedet. They needed this beracha. Mepnei shenoldu be'eretz Mitzrayim. Because they were born in Egypt. They were the only ones of the family of Yaakov that had no recollection of what took place in the house of Yaakov. They never saw Yaakov make a seder on Pesach. They never saw their grandmother Rachel and Leah prepare for a Shabbat. They never heard the bakashot of their father on Shabbat. They never saw what does it mean, achnasat orim of Yaakov. They didn't see anything. They never experienced Bet Yaakov in all its glory. Where were they born? They were Galut Jews. They were born in exile. And that's a handicap. Says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Velo ra'u beto shel Yaakov. That's a tragedy. Vehaya yareh. So you know what Yaakov was worried? Shemi yitme'u ben hagoyim. Because what did we learn from the Me'ira in the Hakamim? What's the insurance in Galut? The nostalgic memories that you have from the old home. That at least you're holding on to something that was important to your grandfather. But if you never witnessed it and you never experienced it and you don't know the values that they had, after all, you weren't born in Canaan. You never went to Canaan. You're Egyptian. Your passport says born in Egypt. And you're the only ones. So he says, Ulfichach hayat sarich Yaakov lahakiram kebanav mamash. So Yaakov had to instill them and said, I have to put in you now a koach that you'll be like Reuven and Shimon that were in my house. And that's what you see when Yaakov Abinu is about to bless them. What does he say? Ve'ata shne banecha hanoladim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim. Your two sons that were born in Egypt. Why did Yaakov have to point that out? Because he's pointing out, I'm not giving it to them out of favoritism. I'm giving it to them because they were born in Egypt. And because of that, they need the vaccine. I hate to use that word. This is a vaccine that works. He's giving them a vaccine and he's telling them, you need to get this spiritual stimulus in order to be inoculated from the Egyptian society. Because you're missing something. So Yaakov had to fill that void, fill that gap. Oh. Based on this, and this is a tremendous hadush. So why does Ephraim get the main beracha? This is Rabbi Yaakov's hadush. He says, why Ephraim? He says, I'll tell you why. He says, because Menashe was born first. And why was he called Menashe? The Torah tells us. Nashani Elohim, God has made me forget all the troubles that I went through in my father's house. Yes. By the time Menashe was born, the troubles were forgotten. But the house of Yaakov was not forgotten. And therefore, when Menashe was born, they were still talking, oh, my father did this, the old house. There was still a connection. Menashe had the advantage. When he was born, at least there was still a link. It was close enough to the Bet Yaakov. It's true, forgetting started to set in, but at least it was Nashari Elohim et bet Abim et Amali. The Amali, the trouble that happened. He was grateful that he forgot the troubles, but the house of Yaakov was still clear in Yosef's mind. So Menashe was able to benefit. You know, when the parents sit at the table and tell stories about their grandparents. Big benefit. As long as the parents remember the grandparents, the great-grandparents, so the children have a link. It's a lifesaver. However, he says, when Ephraim was born, why did he call him Ephraim? Kifarinu veravinu ba'ares. Because we are prosperous and we are successful. Where? In Mitzrayim. By the time Ephraim was born, we're Egyptians. Now already they were settled in. By the time Ephraim was born, they're enjoying all the benefits of Egyptians. Farinu varabinu. What happened to Bet Avi? Bet Avi is, it was already removed. So Ephraim didn't get that same feeling that Menashe got. So therefore Yaakov felt that Ephraim needs it more. He was born already when Farinu varabinu Bahares. And the Jews came as immigrants. They're still talking about the old home. And after they start to make some money and have businesses, they build some homes. What about the old home? We don't want to talk about the old home. We want to forget the old home. Now, Farinu v'Ravinu Ba'aretz. So Ephraim didn't get that same nostalgic feeling that Menashe did. That's why Yaakov, he says, what do you think he learned with Ephraim every day Torah? Because he needed it. He knew that Ephraim was lacking. And therefore he said, I need a havnuta, you got to come every day and learn with me. He tried to put into him what he was missing. And then he says, and I'll prove it to you. Because he says, Menashe is a Jewish name. Ephraim is an Egyptian name. How do I know? Because take any Egyptian name you know. It's got a pe in it, a resh in it, and an ayin, those are Egyptian letters. Paro, Peresh. When they change Yosef's name, what do they change it to? Safnat Paneyah. You got the pe, you got the ayin. When they change the ladies, the midwives, what do they call them, Jewish midwives? Shifra. Shifra's got the Peresh and Pu'ah and Pe'ayin. Anytime you hear a combination of those letters, that's an Egyptian. That's like an Americanized name. And therefore, what's the name of the second son of Yosef? Ephraim. It's got the Peresh. Ah, now already, that's George.
That's Jack.
Now already, we have an Egyptian name. We're getting comfortable. Menashe, yeah, Jewish name. But now already we do the Peresh, because we've got to fit in. We've got to go to, everybody's got to fit in. We don't want them to be an outcast. We're getting comfortable. Yaakov Abinu said, the Ephraim, Yosef says, Dad, what are you doing? I know exactly what I'm doing. You don't know what I'm doing. I know more than you know what I'm doing. Yadati bini yadati. I'm giving the shots and the boosters as I see fit. Who needs it more and who needs it less? Let me put the sand on the Ephraim more. Based on this, he says, when he's giving him the beracha, Yaakov gives an introduction before he gives the beracha. And what does he say? He says, I want you to know that God revealed himself to me. Hashem nira elai beluz be'eres kena'am. And then it says in Pasuk Zayin, Meta alai Rachel, my wife Rachel died, be'eres kena'am. And then it comes along and says it again, Eres kena'am. Says Rabbi Yaakov, why does Yaakov keep on mentioning Eres kena'am? Because that's what he's trying to tell his grandchildren. That's what you're missing. You have no idea of what happened in Eretz Kena'an. You're lacking that value of what it meant, the old Jewish home, the old Jewish community. You were born outside the community. You were born in the city. You were born in exile. You never know what the community is. You don't know the Jewish community. Therefore, digging it into them. Eres Kenan. No, Nadim Eres Mitzrayim. It's a problem. And the brothers, they're not jealous at all. On the contrary, Yaakov Abinu winks to his other kids and says, Baruch Hashem, you don't need this, boys. Let me take care of them. I mean, we don't got to get a shot. You don't got to get a shot. You have antibodies already. You were in the home. They weren't. Therefore, they got to get the. They got to get a shot. Nobody wants to take that shot. They have no choice. Ephraim and Menashe. And then he goes on to say a big chiddush. He comes along and he says, "So amazing." The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that there was some Jews that left Egypt early. And as a result, when they left early, they got killed on the way. The Gemara Sanhedrin says that there was a whole pile of bones. And that's the dry bones that Yehezkel the prophet talks about. It's those Jews that left Mitzrayim. They miscalculated when the Galut was supposed to end. And which tribe was it? Bnei Ephraim, it says. Bnei Ephraim left early. So says Rabbi Yaakov, was it just because they didn't know how to count? Was that the whole, you know, crime of it, miscalculation of when the Galut's supposed to... Why did Bnei Ephraim leave early? That's what he says. He says, because nobody felt the pain of Galut more than Ephraim. It pained them so much, they had to get out. You know why? Because they were betrayed. Take the German Jews that lived in Germany in the 1920s, early 1930s. They were running the country. They had businesses. Their best friends were Germans. They went to school with them. They went to universities. They went to the opera. They went to the shows with them. They were rubbing elbows. They were in all the high-level places in government, doctors and scientists and musicians and poets. They were right there on the top of the echelon of society. And they were getting respect, and they were respecting back, equals. And all of a sudden, one day, those friends of theirs turn into their taskmasters. And all of a sudden, their friends are the ones that are marching them into gas chamber. You know what the Jew in Germany, he went out of his mind. How could this happen? How could this happen? How did our fate change so fast? We were on top. We were equal. We were better than equal. And now all of a sudden, this happens to us. Ephraim, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, he lived at a time, farinu veravinu ba'ares, we're flourishing. And now all of a sudden, what does Ephraim see? They come along and they say, the Midrash writes this. Yeah, his father's Yosef, his grandfather's Yosef. That's the guy that was the finance minister, Jewish guy. Yeah, but you know why he did it? To line his pocket with money. Yeah, he didn't do it for Egypt. Jews love money. They skimmed off and they scraped from the top. They don't know what my grandfather did. Now they're coming along and they can make us the lowest people. After all the farinu viravinu, he says Ephraim felt the galut the most because they saw how fragile it is and it's a facade. It's a thin veneer. Looks like they're very nice. When push comes to shove, finished. The animal came out. And it hurt Ephraim the most because they felt parinu veravinu ba'ares. And that would happen to us. And nothing changes in our time. I think America is different. How can it be different? Spain wasn't different. Europe wasn't. Everybody who thought it was different came to realize that it's not different. There's no exception. That's the nature of exile. And our rabbis tell us, the Mishnah Chochmah says that many Jews made that mistake and they felt that diaspora is not a station, but they felt it's a destination. They felt that they arrived. He says those Jews that felt that Berlin was Jerusalem. Imagine that. Berlin is Jerusalem. What do you got to go to Israel for? We're in America. I recently saw an article of somebody wrote that the American Jew came to Eretz Israel and the rabbi said, so how is the diaspora? So he said, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, that's the biggest crime, that the Jews in the diaspora don't even know they're in the diaspora anymore. They don't know what Galut? I'm not in Galut. I'm in America. This is not a Galut. That they got so comfortable, but they don't realize. They don't realize. It's temporary. The Pasuk says, Ve'ele Shemot Bnei Yisrael Habaim Mitzrayima. What does it say? Habaim. Habaim means that are coming to Egypt. What do you mean? They were in Egypt for 100 years already. Why did it say Habayim? You know what the explanation is? That when a non-Jew comes to the country, after 5 minutes, he's part of the society. Finished. He's there. It's like he's there for 100 years. When a Jew comes to a country, even if he's there for 100 years, it's like he just came off the boat. Habayim. Hey, who's these Jews over here? Where'd they come from? Send them back to Poland. Send them back to Syria. Habayim. Jews are always guests in the land. They're never considered indigenous to the people that are there. That's the nature. And therefore, he says, since Ephraim felt the galut the most, that's why they had to get out. They had to get out because they felt the pain the most. They felt the betrayal. But that is the nature of it, Rabotai. And that's why the key lesson of this parasha, Rashi tells us from the beginning. Rashi tells us the theme of the parasha is that God needed to connect Parashat Vayigash to Parashat Vayechi. Which tells us you can't forget the old country, you can't forget the old traditions, you can't forget your grandfather's Torah, and you can't forget the old Minhagim. That is the buoy that carries you throughout Galut. And Parashat Vayechi, since it's a no man's land, needed that Parashat Setubah. It's a big form of Rachamim. And since Ephraim and Manasseh did not have that connection, therefore they needed a special boost from Yaakov Avinu. It's a berakah, not that will arouse jealousy. As a matter of fact, it'll arouse mercy for them. Poor kids, they didn't see Yaakov's house. They were at a big disadvantage. And then to remember that you're always a Jew first. In Germany, the Jews were more proud that they were German. Now, in retrospect, nobody's too proud to be called themselves a German, to be part of that race. Henry Kissinger once they were putting pressure on Kissinger to do something for Israel. And he sent a letter to Golda Meir, who was the prime minister. He says, Mrs. Prime Minister, I want you to know I'm an American first, I'm a diplomat second, and I'm a Jew third. To what Golda Meir wrote back and said, Mr. Kissinger, you must know and remember that as Jews, we read from right to left. You're a Jew first. And that's a great lesson to learn. When we're in the Galut now of America, the Pasuk says in Parashat Va'era, V'hotzeti etchem mitachat sevlot Mitzrayim. The simple explanation is, I will remove you from the pains of Egypt, from the agony of Egypt, Siblot Mitzrayim, the Sevel. But I saw once an explanation, Sevel could also come from the word to tolerate, Lisbol. The Jews are going to come into exile and they tolerate it. They can tolerate it. It's not so bad. So I have to remove you from that attitude that you can tolerate it, that you think it's not so bad. That if you think that Galut is tolerable, that we're okay. It's okay. It's not okay. And as we descend deeper into Galut, we forget the old traditions. Because it's being stripped away from us from American society and culture. And the new generation doesn't want to hear what their grandfather. My grandfather, he had an accent. It was a banana boat. He came from an old country, different country. He was behind it. He couldn't even use a computer. He didn't even have a text. And therefore, they're considered, outcasts. They're considered barbaric. That's the problem with the new generation. And the rabbi is telling you that's the key. As long as parents keep their children connected to the old minhagim, and you see pictures of the old time, you see the way they dressed, and you perpetuate their values, then we have a chance. It's just a matter of time. We started this exile 2,000 years ago. The clock is ticking. So that means, galut means there's ge'ula. But the second ingredient has to be the keshet between the past. If a Jew doesn't remember his past, he has no future. And that's what the Torah is coming to tell us in the blessings of Ephraim and Menasheh. Parashat Setubah is a blessing. It's the highest form of mercy. And it is our prayer as we end the parasha. We say, Hazak, Hazak. There's no better way to end Parashat Vayechi to tell the Jews in Galut America, Hazak, Hazak. Stay strong, Benit Hazak. Don't forsake the traditions. Don't forget that ze eli ve'anveu elohe abi ve'arom emen. The religion didn't start by you. There's people that came before you. And as long as you have even a nostalgic connection to them, you'll survive. That's the blessing that we give our children on Friday night. You see, Becha Elohim, Ke Ephraim, Bechim Nasheh. You can be born in America. You weren't born in the old country. You were born in the modern. But you should be like these two people. These two people, they against all odds. Just like Yaakov Abinu blessed them, Yaakov gives us the ability to bless our children with that same koa. Stop.